All right, welcome to another edition of the Horse Racing Happy Hour. Wow, that did pretty good, Louie. That was that was solid. Like, I didn't know how that was going to work out. Like, just so people know that Louie, first off, Louie's not on his normal microphone. That was his, like, headphone microphone. Or is that your new microphone that you got at home?
No. It's headphone mic.
Okay, so, and that was a, what's the name of that drink that they're calling? The Spire?
The Spire, yeah. This is the Derby 145, so that was, oh boy, 3 years ago?
I don't know what we're on. I'd be lying if I told you what.
Yeah, because in 2 years we're gonna have 150, and they're gonna unveil the new paddock. So there you go. Yeah.
Man, I don't. What is Matt smoking there? I'm like, did you spliff that thing right there? It's like a pass. I mean, come on, man. I like that. All right.
That's legal in New York, baby.
I got a Perdomo. I don't know what.
That's a good stick, man. That's a real good stick. I love that. So, we got Mike Gandolfo, Louis Rabeau, and our special guest host today, Matt Rabotowski with US Bets. Did I nail the last name? I mean, we've had you on before. Did I hit it?
Yeah.
Nailed it. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
All right. But what's the most interesting way you've heard your last name pronounced? Like, is it like with my last name, people want to put like an extra, they want to put an R in there, or they want to put, or of course they always just like add the Gandolfini, and like they do that. I get all kinds.
They just change it. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and mine's like, phonetically, basically, pretty freaking easy, but people just want to complicate it. Yours is legit hard.
Yeah, one time at the DMV, I got Rybolotowski or something like that. Like, there's not even an M in there. Person just added it. It's definitely a challenging one, but it's easier than it looks. Rybolotowski.
There it is.
If people don't know Matt, you find him at Matt Rabotowski on Twitter. He's as easy to spell as me, but has more followers, which means I'm a terrible Twitter follower. Follow, I should say. He's written for the New York Times, Forbes, The Guardian, Reuters, CBSSports.com. He's covered Olympics, all kinds of stuff, but he is especially interested in sports betting. And Matt will be at Saratoga this weekend, so we wanted to pull him in, get him ahead of the weekend. So there you go.
A legit journalist right there.
He is a legit journalist. There you go.
We're just US a couple bets. And we were talking before the show started, Louie.
Yeah.
There is a line tonight. We get football back tonight.
Okay. There you go. Yeah, Hall of Famer. Right.
So we're going up against football, which, Hall of Fame game, preseason or not, even if it is Jacksonville, like, people are so starved for sports right now because
for sure.
We've been spoiled with the NBA season going longer and longer, and it felt like this drought. And you're doing sports radio right now.
I was going to say, you're talking to a guy doing 10 hours of sports radio a week right now.
Like, it seems like this sport desert. And again, I was telling Matt, it's probably because I'm a Reds fan and they're terrible. The most interesting thing that's happened with the Reds is this trade deadline week, which they did pretty freaking well. I'm actually pleased with.
They did as well as I thought they could do, frankly, yes.
And then but, you know, football's back, so people are excited about that. Would you ever bet preseason football games?
I don't bet football games.
All right.
Yeah.
No way.
Matt shaking his head no.
No way. You don't know if Derek Carr is going to play one series or...
Oh, he's playing two series max, right?
Yeah. Well, any of those guys.
And Trevor Lawrence might play
Travis
more.
At the end, like, how many carries is he going to get tonight? Yeah, right. Could have hardcore degeneracy and bet on the carries, right? Over under 6.5 or something like that.
It's gonna be crazy. But I like watching preseason football is that, you know, you get in the third, fourth quarter, and actually it looks like they're gonna be on a little bit of a weather delay. So we're gonna have to sit here and watch delayed football, I guess. But I love watching those guys who are fighting for those roster spots. You know, that is highly undervalued. When you've got a guy who's trying to do everything he can to make one of those last few roster spots, I mean, it's pretty awesome. I mean, the guy fight for his dream, that's the one thing I do like about watching the preseason football games. So that's all I got to say about that, I guess.
I used to cover the Titans about 10 years ago, so I was close to you guys. And I remember this because you raised a really great point, Mike. There was this corner who he was right on the cut. This guy's name, Alfalava. And they let us go on the sidelines for the last 2 minutes of the final preseason game. And he had a hit where boom, he knocked a guy out basically. And yeah, he made the team. And
yeah, right.
So a lot of those cases actually happen.
Yeah.
You have to play till the final play of the game, and that's their chance to impress the coaches. So
do something they remember. Definitely a fun,
yeah, it's a fun thing to watch in the preseason.
So since you've done this before, and we'll get to horse racing here in a second, I can only imagine, like, you know, Louis doing sports radio, and they're like, talk sports, and we're doing horse racing. They're like, and we're talking about everything but horse racing right now. How many, when you cover a football team, you probably know, how many legit roster spots do you think are up for grabs, though, in a preseason roster?
I was going to say six or seven. Okay, good.
Okay.
I feel good about that then. There you go.
Because, I mean, I think spring training baseball, you know basically everybody except probably the last three or four spots. And it might even be, you know, less than that. I don't know. Louis, you got a single barrel going right now?
I don't. I got one of my punches going that I brought over the other day.
Oh, so nice.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
I still got to work on your cuts, man. Like, you flat out just, like, you can never circumcise a Jewish kid, because that thing would be like.
You're correct. I am not a moil, but I do enjoy a lot of smoke with my cigars. So there you go.
Man, I'll tell you what. What is everybody drinking tonight?
I'm on some old Bardstown bottled in bond.
Oh, okay.
I haven't had it in a long time. It was on sale at the corner.
100 proof.
So I don't have to do the show tomorrow. Rest in peace to our friend Mike Pratt. We're going to his memorial in Lexington tomorrow, so I don't actually have to be cogent in the morning except to drive to Lexington, and so other than that I've got nothing going on. So I thought, you know, a little BIB tonight, a little bottled and bond for me. So it's very good, by the way, and I got it for like $21 or something. So
nice.
Yeah, terrific.
Matt, are you do you have a drink of choice with you tonight, or are you just smoking the cigar?
Just smoking the cigar.
Attaboy. Right, I've got a little, this is actually some Old Forester, a barrel that I picked. And I picked it. It's been a while ago, but I saw it on the shelf. Man, it looks pretty good. So, and it is very rather tasty. One of my favorite barrel selection.
Vintage, drink. Vintage horse racing shirt of the Racing Rachel, shirt from, previously Indiana Grand and now Horseshoe Indianapolis. And so,
ooh,
my wife saw that shirt and figured that I didn't need it anymore. sorry, Rachel.
I like to wear it around my house and just see how my wife reacts to it, for sure.
And although both my kids will be regularly seen wearing an Indiana Derby shirt around.
Sure.
Yes. Yeah. It's pretty obscene.
Yeah.
So Rachel takes good care of us.
Yep.
All right, let's get to the racing. Let's talk about what we saw. You know, we were heavy on Jackie's Warrior, and Jackie's Warrior
didn't even talk about the race. I mean,
no.
Like, you know, we,
it was just like Jackie's
it was,
Warrior.
Yeah, and then he went for an exercise run. Zach, go ahead, go to that. Everyone picked this winner.
By knee deep in snow, the half mile in 45 seconds, and they come into the stretch and confidently ridden here by Joel Rosario. It is Jackie's Warrior who has the lead with an eighth of a mile to the finish. Jackie's Warrior in front by four lengths. Knee deep in snow has moved into second. And Jackie's Warrior remains undefeated here at Saratoga. And
never rode
an unprecedented,
like, I mean,
didn't do anything.
For the third straight season.
Matt could have ridden that horse and Jackie's Warrior would have won that race.
That's probably true. You know, what's interesting, Rosario's caught some flack this year for his rides on Epicenter, which we're going to see next. There's nothing wrong with that ride. Mike's probably right here that essentially any North American jockey probably could have won that race on Jackie's Warrior last week. But to Rosario's credit, there's no reason to get the stick out or show him the stick or anything like that. Because for the next race, if you need that emphasis, save it for the next race, save it for the next training, whatever it is. So credit that he didn't. He literally didn't even push the horse. We're cruising. We're good. I don't need to do anything. So, no, total credit to him. Sometimes you just let the horse do all the work, and the horse and Jackie's Warrior. Good to see him in good form. I think the sprinter class is a bit like the distaff class in that it's going to be pretty wide open once we get to Breeders' Cup at Keeneland in November. So, you know, it's nice to see the top of those classes performing very well, especially in Grade 1 company.
So is he the best older dirt male in training?
No, that's what's wild. I think we might see one this weekend. I'll be interested to see.
We will see one this weekend.
Yeah, probably. It is what it is. Here's but I mean, I at right now, like if we're talking older dirt males doing things that aren't sprinting. Like, I think Olympiad right now is a better horse than Jackie's Warrior, if that's fair to say.
Ooh, interesting. Ooh.
I like him a lot. And then Life is Good. They're going to run. They're going to run against each other this weekend. It's not even close, man. Okay, so outside of big days, like going to Oaks, going to Derby, going to, you know, whatever, the Whitney's probably my favorite matchup of the year to this point.
Yeah.
Between Olympiad and Life is Good. I hate to get ahead. I hate to do this. Hot Rod Charlie's in that field at 9-2. That's how good this field is. So I'm in a 6-horse field. I'm pumped to see this because we talk about the Arabian Peninsula bump. We saw Art Collector come back today and win at the Spa. I tried to beat him. That worked out very poorly. And so it'll be interesting to see if Todd Pletcher's got License Good ready to go coming out of Maidan. He's already got that one race back at 7 furlongs in the Nehrud. So it'll be interesting to see. But Jackie's Warrior, getting back to what we're supposed to be talking about. Yeah, just looked like a grade one winner all the way.
What do you think before I ask the next question, Matt?
Yep. So after the race, Asmussen said that Jackie's Warrior has 2 races left in his career. It's the Forgo and then the Breeders' Cup Sprint. So that's the question. You guys brought up all those great older males before. What happens if Jackie's Warrior goes 6-for-6 this year and Flightline loses in the Classic? And so
it's a good one. I like that.
It goes back to Matoli in 2019 because Matoli had a similar path. He went the Met Mile, he won. Then he lost his next race at Saratoga, but then he won the Forgo, and then he won the Sprint after that. I thought Matoli had a legitimate case to be Horse of the Year that year and went to
Louis had a poster above him, above his bed, of Matoli.
Had?
Yeah. You still do. You still have it?
Yeah, yeah. Settle down. Thank you.
With the lotion and the tissues next to it, or?
Yeah. Let's settle down. Yes. Come on. All right. Jeez.
Drink. The lotion and the tissues are still there too. But here's the thing. Sprinters almost never win Horse of the Year honors, right? It's almost like you have to have not only do you have to have a perfect year, you have to be legendary. And so Jackie's Warrior could put in 2 awesome efforts closing out his career, and he still might not win Horse of the Year. So,
yeah, that's probably right. I Mike will tell you, he's been hanging out with me for a little bit. What are my 3 horses? Gunrunner, Matoli, and Bricks and Mortar.
Yeah, yep.
Those are the 3, right?
Field Pass is probably number 4.
Oh, Field Pass is up there, but that. I mean, and obviously King Guillermo get the hashtag.
King Guillermo, yeah. Let's drink.
There it is. Oh, there it is. But no, I mean, Jackie's Warrior goes beat and wins all those races. I would definitely vote him top if Flightline doesn't win the Classic. I'm with you for sure. I think we'll know a lot when Flightline runs in San Diego next month. I think we'll know a lot.
Yeah. So, I tend to think Flightline's probably the best older dirt male. But we'll see. But nothing against Jackie's Warrior. If it's against Jackie's Warrior and Olympiad, I'm going Jackie's Warrior all day long. So, okay. All right. So we're going to move on to the next race that we saw. We got our boy Zach with it all ready to go. Epicenter winning the Jim Dandy.
Is early voting the leader here. Zandon being asked for more on the outside. 3/4 went in 1:12-1. And they're at the top of the stretch. And it is early voting challenged here by Zandon on the outside. Tawny Port is next, and Epicenter is out in the middle of the track, and now there's an 1/8 mile to the finish, and Epicenter is coming on now, and Tawny Port is rallying down at the rail. Here is Epicenter, and he's the center of attention now. Epicenter comes from off the pace to win the Jim Dandy Stakes.
By the way, there's a lot on horse racing Twitter about track announcers and different things. That's a really good call by John Imbrioli, man. That's him realizing what's happening. That's him catching Epicenter, making that move in the middle of the track, recognizing that he's eating up that ground, having that line ready. There's only 4 horses to have a line ready for, but you know, he's got that line ready. That's a nice job by him. And frankly, Joel Rosario rated that race perfectly. Epicenter has turned out to be a horse that doesn't break well. And so to get him ready and in that spot, I remember when he fell back to the back, I thought, I don't like that much. And when they hit the top of the stretch, it looked like Zandon was in position. I mean, perfect position to just take that race. Great job by Joel Rosario. Back-to-back races, wins a grade one, wins that grade two. And that's as good as it gets at Saratoga, man.
just quickly on Embry-Riddle, he is genuinely the nicest guy in the industry too.
Well, he's also so, just Nyro, right? I mean, he's Mr. Nyro.
Yeah. Yeah. Mr. Nyro. He's been there for decades. So it's just tremendous for him that that he finally got bumped up to that position.
Is he 71? Is that right?
Really? He's 71? Wow.
Man, I'll look it up. Keep going.
Yeah. He's definitely had big shoes to fill, but
sure.
Yeah, just really happy for him that that he's at this point of his career now, at a top meet like that, and he's doing a really good job. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I came in saying this race is going to help answer some questions about this 3-year-old crop. Epicenter stepping up to the plate was one that we had, and he definitely we wondered if this was a horse that was just going to always finish second, and obviously broke away a little bit there. I don't know if I learned anything about the other three, and I'm still wondering how, you know, is this a really good deep 3-year-old class or is it just super mediocre? And I'm still leaning a little bit towards the super mediocre. What would you all think?
I completely agree with Mike. If you compare this class to some of the recent ones, it leans towards the mediocre side. Especially when you consider the fact that Zandon arguably could be the second best 3-year-old. And I thought tactically Flavian Pratt ran a questionable race. Just in the past, Zandon has been more of the closer type, and this race set up perfectly for him.
We lost you. Oh, we got a phone call coming in. Listen, all right, he's got all his women calling him.
Yeah,
right in the middle of the show, man.
One of my pickleball boys.
Hey, I see you on the internet, and that's in the other. They're calling to tell you, interrupting the whole deal.
Who's your friend in the middle of that show? Yeah, I get it.
Pickleball.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyway, I kind of felt like their roles were reversed, right? Like most people expected Zandon to close into that pace, and
where Epicenter was, yeah.
And the opposite occurred. So tactically, it was a poor race. You can make the claim that both Epicenter and Zandon were using this as a prep, so it didn't really matter. Both of them have the Travers in mind. So we'll see in a few weeks what happens. But in terms of Epicenter, the Breeders' Cup Futures came out this week, and he's 20-1. Right now, that's a gift.
I agree.
Especially if he improves even more in the Travers and then goes to, what is it now, at the Belmont. It used to be the Jockey Club Gold Cup. Now it's the Woodward. So
if and that's moving, that, and I think that's moving to Aqueduct, is it not?
It's moving to Aqueduct, yeah.
Yeah, right, because they're doing the renovations at Belmont. So that'll be interesting. I don't know if I totally agree that it's a mediocre class. It is deeper than we're used to. The good thing about it being deep is that 9-10 of these horses can win any of these races, and they're all still running. That's the good part, right? Usually by now, we're down to 3 or 4 3-year-olds that are actually running, that have been running in all of these races, whether it be the Haskell or the Whitney or whatever, or the Jim Daddy, excuse me. And so, you know, I'm just happy we got all these horses. We might have 9 or 10 really good probables for that Travers, where Cyberknife goes off at 8 or 9 to 1. And that horse has won 2 grade ones this year. I mean, that's how deep, putting quality aside, at least for the better, how good this 3-year-old class is. And so for me, I look at it from the gambling perspective. It's a terrific 3-year-old class, and the horses are actually running, so I'll take it every day.
Well, let's see. I want to see some of these 3-year-olds beat some of the older horses.
And that'll end up happening. Especially that Pacific Classic's going to come. There will probably be a couple 3-year-olds in that race. And so, no, I think we'll get our chance to see them.
So we'll move on to Saratoga, and I'm not Saratoga. We're going to leave Saratoga. We're going to leave the spa, and move out to one of my favorite tracks, Del Mar. And Louie actually came over to the house, and we watched these late races at Del Mar, and it was just incredible to me. We were watching these odds, Louie. I mean, number one, the Baffert effect of him being back on these odds was severe. I mean, they we were watching these odds, and there were some unbelievable horses getting some great prices, like double digit odds. And American Theorem was,
I got 5 to 1 on American Theorem.
Yeah. One time American Theorem was like 9.
He got up to like 7-8 to 1, and by post time he got back down to like 5-6 or whatever. But that was my biggest win bet of the day, was American Theorem, because we had given him out as top pick in that race. Zach, go ahead and pull up the Bing Crosby here. We'll watch American Theorem do his damn thing.
Shaw's been overtaken. It's American Theorem, the gray in full flight for the wire. I do believe the rider just dropped his stick, but it's not making any difference. American Theorem striding home strongly, yet her number is now chasing from second. American Theorem and Joe Bravo have won the Bing Crosby. Second place will go to Get Her Number.
I mean, that's about as dominant of a performance as you're going to see. I mean, it was freaking nuts.
That's 22-1 on the first quarter. Breeders' Cup sprint, usually you get 21-4, 22 flat, that kind of thing. That means American Theorem's ready to go, man. And that's an exciting class as well. Like I just mentioned with Jackie's Worry. If you have it, honestly, we get to Breeders' Cup, American Theorem's going to be 12-15-1. And that tells you how deep that class is, how good that class is. I'm not saying he's going to win the Breeders' Cup, but it gives you an idea of how deep that class is. Big fan of his. So glad I put the punch in that win bet, paid for all my bets on Saturday. It'll be interesting to see which of those horses ships for the next race or stays in Southern California, tries to pick off another graded stakes out there. If they want to, man, it's the hard part, I'm sure, about having a horse in Southern California. You can win the grade two. You can win the Bing Crosby. It's like $350K. Right. And, or you can ship to Saratoga. It's a $600,000 race. So it's just going to, or ship to, I don't know, wherever else, Churchill eventually. But, I was very impressed with American Theorem. He drops the stick at the eighth pole. Didn't matter. Like Trevor mentioned, want to go on record. I'm going to do it every time we show Del Mar. Trevor Dimon should stay as long as he wants to. And then, our guy, Matt Dinnerman, should be the next track announcer at Del Mar. Matt, go ahead.
Agree with you on all points. I actually didn't see the race. That was the first time I watched it. I have a stronger opinion on the San Diego.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Let's give a shout out to Matt Bernier of NBC Sport, because last year in early summer, he put out a list of the top older horses in the country, and he had Royal Ship as one and Country Grammar as two. And it looked like Royal Ship almost disappeared from the face of the earth, and he just ran huge last Saturday, to the point where again he's a contender for the Classic. Maybe not the second or third choice, but like Louis said with the American Theorem before, you might be able to get 12 or 15 to 1 on Royal Ship if he runs in the Classic, and there's value there based on how he ran. So that's my first take, and then my other take is that even though Country Grammar lost, he still ran very well, and
yes, 100%.
His best distance is at 10 furlongs, not at the San Diego handicap length. So again, he's just trending up, and he's another one who provides value there down the road if the public is all in on Flightline.
So let's go.
Let's go ahead and watch it.
Yeah, Zach, let's play that, because I said something to Mike right after this race.
Running a big one on the outside. Country Grammar is in there. Stiletto Boy. Parnelli is starting to run on behind that. Tripoli, they come for home, and Royal Ship looking for the big upset here. Royal Ship draws clear under a hand ride from Mike Smith. It's Country Grammar in second, but it's Royal Ship just owning the San Diego. Royal Ship makes it look easy. Second was Country
Grammar. Hey, Zach, do me a favor. Rewind it like about 10 seconds. Watch Country Grammar here, everybody, because, and by the way, we want to thank Del Mar actually has their own replays on their website. Patrick Emerson second place here. He's the eight horse.
In second, but it's Royal Ship just owning the San Diego.
Perfect.
Royal Ship makes it look easy. Second was Country Grammar.
It's coming on.
It'll get close then for
more
third.
Than that. Country Grammar doesn't switch leads until the 16th pole. That's a horse that hasn't run in a while, hasn't run over two turns in a while, that's coming off of a big layoff, coming out of the Arabian Peninsula. Mike and I talk about it all the time. That bounce out of the Arabian Peninsula. We went against Country Grammar in that race for that reason, not because he's not a good horse. He's a great horse. It's not a question. The question was, can he bounce back immediately first race back in the U.S.? Usually the answer is no. Art Collector landed in a softer spot today. We also saw Life is Good come back and win at Belmont in a grade two. So it's not as though it can't happen. It's just that it's unusual at this level with a bunch of good horses in the race. And so to watch him not switch leads until the 16th, that gives me hope, like Matt just mentioned, that an extra furlong and a half after that, if he gets back to that 10 furlong instead of 8.5, he's going to be just fine. And I even said to Mike, man, Country Grammar looked like a single in the Pacific Classic for next month. And Mike went, whoa, I'm not sure about that. But that's what he looked like to me, even when I say 10 seconds after the race, something like that. I mean, so that's, Matt, I'm totally with you. That's what he looked like to me.
And I'll tell you right now, too, like just we were talking about the odds effect. Royal Ship, I think at one time, we were looking at Royal Ship like a 15-1 or something like that. And it went off 9-1, and that's a quality horse. We're sitting there with another buddy of ours who doesn't really know much about horses, and we're looking at you and I were big on the one and the two. Defundit was the two. I'm trying to remember who the one was.
There Goes Harvard.
There Goes Harvard. That's right. There Goes Harvard and Defundit. They were
trying
way
to use a local
under
horse,
bet,
but then we used the wrong local horse.
I did say Royal Ship, and actually I had Royal Ship in one of my plays, but I didn't have Country Grammar and one of the Quinella plays, and just incredible to see the odds difference in these horses was I just couldn't believe it, what some of these prices you were getting. And again, with Del Mar, you actually had big fields and you got some of these really good prices on some really quality horses.
Yeah, and the other part of this is, you know, on this show we talk about classical and class. Man, that's four races of classical and class right there. You get Jackie's Warrior, class, Epicenter, class. Yeah. American Theorem was total class in that race. And then you get Royal Ship, who's, I mean, I think it's a Brazilian bred all things.
Yeah.
You know, and whatever. I mean, who cares? I mean, that's just, if we can add to that classic group in the way that we already have that sprint group, we're going to have the turf groups. I'm never worried about that because of the European shippers. We have the distaff group. You know, if we can get a great classic group like this, that's exciting. And we're shaping up, frankly, for
a great and Breeders' Cup.
A really, really deep Breeders' Cup. Matt, do you agree with that?
Really deep. Yeah.
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 That's
it's a positive development what's happening in Del Mar. Last few years it's really been marred by short fields, and from a bettor's perspective, you just cringe to see that when grade ones only have four or five horses. And that's actually happened at Saratoga so far this year. And I think the reason it's happening is because there's just so much chalk, and those mid-level trainers, they don't want to waste their time or money taking on the Epicenters or the Jackie's Warriors or Nest or Secret Oaths of the world there. And then so selfishly on their part, it makes sense not to enter in those races, but bettors want to see those 10 to 12 to ones come in, and you're just not seeing that. You're seeing 1-5s, 2-5s win, and takes away from the entertainment for sure.
Yeah. So Del Mar's been considerably better at that. We've watched that ship and win program really work. Matt, we were discussing, you know, in the last couple of weeks, we're excited because Santa Anita's adopting a version of that. And so we're hoping it'll keep going, because in our opinion, man, we need Southern California for this sport, man. You know, Santa Anita's got to be awesome. Del Mar's got to be awesome for this sport to continue to thrive. And so I'm becoming more hopeful watching Del Mar this year, and that Santa Anita is going to adopt some of those, I don't know, I don't want to call them practices or whatever, but you know, those policies, whatever. And so hopefully we'll see an uptick there. It'll be great. You know, we learned, you know, Mike, you and I were there, and we played like $9 and $12 and $15 pick fours at the Indiana Derby They paid like $400.
Yeah.
And it was because the fields were deep. And even though Ivar hits in the sequence and another, you know, and one of the two or three favorites in the Indiana Derby hits, it still pays.
That's what two singles, right?
800-1 on the pick four. That's what you want, right? You want those deeper fields. Just so even if the chalk comes in, like Matt mentioned, you're still going to get people trying to get the price in a certain race. Like, let's beat Ivar. He's coming off a layoff. That's a reasonable take, right? That's an okay angle if somebody wants to play that. It doesn't happen for that better. All that money's in the pool then for whoever does hit the ticket. And so my hope is that, you know, it's so strange to watch these smaller tracks. You know, Matt might laugh, but it's one of the reasons I love playing Turfway in the winter, man, because you're guaranteed 8 horses every damn race. And then on up, and usually 12, right? And so if you do hit the pick five, I mean, I remember hitting the chalkiest, crappiest pick five of my life this year. And it paid like $350 at Turfway.
That's awesome.
Right? It's all, of course, it's awesome, right? Exactly. So, you know, you play out like a $40 ticket, it pays $350 because every favorite freaking hits, whatever. Who cares? It's awesome. So,
just, you know, it's math. You get more choices, you get bigger, you get pools, you get more spread out, and that's just what it is. And I want to go back to the American Theorem just real quick before we move on, because I'm fascinated that American Theorem, who's basically made this late in his career shift to being a sprinter. This is not American Theorem, who's been a sprinter his entire career. He's been a very average horse, quite honest, at route distances. And now he gets into, you know, year five of his career, starts sprinting, looks like he's been completely rejuvenated. I mean, it's a totally different horse. And, you know, we're going to get these two horses. American Theorem and Jackie's Warrior have never gone up against each other. You know, so I'm fascinated right now by that matchup. And for him to go no whip, I mean, literally didn't even have the whip in his hand and just dominate the way he did. I mean, it's incredible.
You know, who's a little like this is it was Long Range Toddy. They ran that horse over and over and over again at longer distances. They made him a sprinter and he's not winning races, but man, he's picking off second and third spots, picking off checks all the time. Looks much, much more comfortable at 6 furlongs, and so hopefully they can keep it up. But Dallas Stewart has really done right by that horse and in his 6-year-old campaign and his 5-year-old last year, frankly. So, look, not of the class, obviously, of an American Theorem who wins a grade one, but it is cool, Mike, when they do figure out what's best for the horse.
All right, so we're going to move on and talk a little bit about some of the major stories in horse racing. And we're seeing a little bit of a shift to TVG. Louis, you want to talk about that?
I'm going to defer to Matt here. So if people don't know Matt's work, I really want you to go find him at Matt Rybaltowski on Twitter. Matt's a rare gift for those of us that follow horse racing and bet horse racing and not other things, because Matt's interested in the global sports betting world, global meaning all sports, but loves horse racing. And so is really in tune with what's going on in the sport. So I will defer to Matt on TVG and the FanDuel relationship.
Yeah, so FanDuel, for your listeners who don't know, it's owned by a major betting company in Europe called Flutter Entertainment, and I think it was 2009, FanDuel bought TVG, and they only spent $50 million for it, and TVG is just massive. TVG is in something like 60 million homes around the country in 30 states or so. And last week, a report came out that FanDuel is looking to rebrand TVG and change the name to FanDuel TV. So what they're going to do is they're going to completely overhaul the morning TV schedule at this new network, FanDuel TV. They've brought in Kay Adams, who does a phenomenal job. Formerly, she was the host of Good Morning Football on the NFL Network.
She's really good.
Yeah. So she's going to host an hour-long show in the mornings. It looks like they're bringing on Pat McAfee to host a show, and Bill Simmons will as well. And so what's going to happen eventually is that the TVG model that was prevalent for whatever 13 years or so is going to incorporate sports betting now. But the good thing for racing fans is that in the afternoons, the current format will still be offered. So you'll still have the live racing at 4 or 5 different tracks. You'll still have Trackside Live every day. They haven't announced yet what will happen to their big time hosts like Todd Shroop or Simon Bray or some of the others who also do a great job. But it's a tectonic shift for TVG, and it'll just be interesting to see if the millennial sports bettor now converts to horse racing because what FanDuel has in the works here.
Well, the other thing too that we've been talking about on the show, Matt, for last week, I guess, maybe the last 2 weeks, what does also the fixed odds do? I mean, to the effect of the new horse players and those millennial bettors and those people who might be crossing over from sports betting, traditional sports betting. Maybe, you know, I'm watching this Hall of Fame game and I've got some money on that, and I decide while it's in delay, I'm going to go bet some horses. I mean, what does the fixed odds do on that?
Yeah, well, like Louis, he nailed it before with the American theorem and how the odds fluctuated there. And what did you wind up going off at the post? It was around like 7-1 or
I think 6 or 5-1, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah. So the great thing with fixed odds is that whenever you make that the bet, you're locked into that price. So at one point, American Theorem was 9-1. We brought up Cyberknife before because his odds dropped at the gate. So
yeah, right.
So yeah, if you're making a bet of $200 to $300, the extra juice there, that's a round of drinks, or
sure,
dinner after the race. So there's this Australian company called BetMakers that partnered with Monmouth, and so they're the first company to offer fixed odds in the U.S. And what they're doing in New Jersey is sort of a trial balloon for other states nationwide. So I think some of their potential partners they want to see how well it performs, and then maybe they'll expand to further states next year.
Something I could see, by the way, too, is guy looks up the races day before, sees that, I don't know, American Theorem is 6-1. He's like, you know what? I love that price. Locks in $100. Oh, I got to watch that race the next day, right? Oh, I'm going to watch American Theorem. Sees him at 8-1.
Parimutuel. Throws another 100
on it. That's exactly right. So I think there's actually incentive for tracks to start offering both, right? And so, you know, I don't know how, you know, the issue in a state like Kentucky where there is only parimutuel wagering and not fixed odds wagering might be a little difficult. But in some other places, I don't know, California, Illinois, New York, Florida, whatever, you know, to have both. I mean, frankly, if you're Gulfstream, having both is a no-brainer. It's if you're Pimlico, it's a no-brainer. You know, Laurel, whatever. And so, you know, those sorts of places, Monmouth obviously is taking advantage. You know, it was cool. I appreciate it. And I hope they're listening again this week. Someone tweeted the show right after, like the next day, and said, hey, I was at the Haskell. Thanks for talking about the fixed odds. There were 6 windows for fixed odds.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. That's cool. No, but that's cool, right? Like that they had that, you know, available to bettors. And so, you know, and obviously you got to keep those monies separate and all the calculations, whatever else. But, you know, if it's as simple as just having different windows, it might be something that we just need to do to get that 25-year-old who's used to like -110 on the Colts or -110 on the Cubs, whatever it is. Right. And so to me, the fixed odds thing is a no-brainer. I don't know that it'll be hugely attractive to someone like me who's in their 40s and is used to parimutuel wagering. But to be fair, if I know that, you know, we mentioned Mitoli earlier, I can lock him in at 7-2. I'll lock in Mitoli at 7-2 or whatever it is, right? And so instead of a bunch of money coming in late on the Met Mile or whatever it might be. And so, yeah, no, to me, the fixed odds thing especially for like win play show bets. That it's such a no brainer. Now, if you want to get into longer bets for, you know, pick fours, pick fives, whatever, those might have to stay parimutuel, which is fine. But to me, the side by side betting there, I think it encourages the other version of betting as well.
And I the one thing I disagree with you, Louis, is I think some of these horse players are gonna, like, you're gonna see someone go make their bets for the day with a fixed odd option, and they know so and so is gonna scratch or so and so's entered in two different races and where they're gonna favor, and you can get this price on this horse right now, but once that other horse scratches, and you know, we saw that in Indiana, right? You were hot and heavy in one of the races, and
Jeopardy Theory,
right? And then the favorite scratched out, made Jeopardy Theory. Jeopardy Theory went from like 12 to 1,
5 to 2,
yep. Right? And if you could have gotten 10 to 1 early on, you would have hammered the shit out of that. We are now explicit, so
you're right. Though I would have hammered the shit out of that. You're right.
So I mean, I think at the end of the day, like, that's where, you know, there's some the people who pay attention, the horse players who pay attention, and know kind of like what's going on with the early scratches, because the odds don't really change until right before the race. Like, it's a whole different strategy play there. And
yeah,
so why is that bad?
It's good.
In the 2014 Derby, some insider, might have been an owner, put it was close to $1 million on Candy Boy right at the mm-hmm. gate. And so his odds dropped from 16 to 1 to 9 to 1, and it affected California Chrome too. California Chrome was 2 to 1, and he went up a little bit to 5 to 2. But if fixed odds were there back then, like Mike said, you could have hammered the shit out of Candy Boy and gotten a much better price.
Yeah, I love it. All right, Matt, before we let you go, you're going to be at the Spa on Saturday. Do you have a
Hang on, Matt, do you want to hang around and handicap?
Yeah,
I'll handicap. All right,
let's go. Hang around.
Well, we're not gonna have him make his Whitney pick then right now. No, that's what I get for following the freaking show sheet, Louie. All right, I'm just trying to do what I'm told. Read the teleprompter, Burgundy. All right, there you go.
By the way, Candy Boy finished 13th in the Kentucky Derby in 2014. So
I don't know why I think my camera's been drinking all of a sudden. Like, I got blurry. I don't know what's going on there. So
that's just better for the audience that I'm nice and clear and Mike is nice and blurry. There we go.
All right. Let's go ahead, and we're getting into the green sheet racing time of the handicapping part of the show. You know, make sure you get your green sheet racing at the track online, greensheetracing.com, and follow along with our picks, their picks, and come up with your best option to hit some races. And then of course Louie's gonna have his favorite to go against, his yep. most likely winner. And yep. what's the sequence you're going to go with this time?
I'm playing the pick six at Saratoga and the green sheet.
A whole pick six?
How about that, baby? I love the pick six this weekend at Saratoga.
All right. I love it. Buddy.
So by the way, just so
big bucks, you'll get paid.
So everybody knows, this is a stakes show. We will talk about the stakes. If you want all of my picks, that's greensheetracing.com.
All right. Greensheetracing.com. Matt, you get the green sheet?
Yes, I will
Matt.
Now.
Matt, say yes. Right. Right, just say yes.
Does Matt know the story? I don't even know if Matt knows the story, because I told it early on. Matt, I got into this sport as an adult. Like, you're lucky you got to go to Saratoga as a kid and all that. My first horse race, I was in my 20s, and it was a Sunday brunch in Louisville when I was living in Bloomington, and my parents dragged my wife and me out of Bloomington to have a weekend together in Louisville. We decided to go to brunch at Churchill Downs, and my mom accidentally bet $50 across the board on a horse who was like 12 to 1, and the horse hit and paid for the weekend. And so that was my introduction to horse racing. I was terrible. After moving here, I decided I would get into it because it was the sport around here. And it was the sheet, man. I took the sheet. I took the program at the track, and I tried to figure out what the commonalities were, what the handicappers in the sheet were seeing. And that's where I got my start. And about 3 months after, I felt really comfortable. So that's why we love having our partners over at Green Sheet Racing.
All right. And that pick six is going to start off with,
I got a drink for my mom's bets now. That's fine. All right.
The pick six is going to start off with race 7. It is the Grade 2 Glen Falls. It's, again, Louis loves these mile and a half, these route turf races.
I do.
It's a mile and a half on the inner turf for fillies and mares 4 years old.
Boo,
and up.
Non bougie.
$250,000 purse. And are we going to start right off with a single, Louis?
So hang on, I'm pulling up that information because I'm not a good
Matt, you have your notes in front of you. Can you go right now on this Glen Falls? I need to work with professionals here. Okay.
Look, I hear you, dude.
All right. I don't know. Matt might have froze. I don't know. Either that or he is stoned out of the bejesus. So,
that's a hell of a cigar right there.
I'm gonna go. We might have to get reconnected. There
it
is. With
I
Matt.
Got it. Never mind. Yeah, well, right. Matt, punch back in. So I went 6-2 in this race.
And okay. So not a total single.
No, I think Warlike Goddess is your most likely winner here, but I do think that Virginia Joy, the German bred, actually, Ired Ortiz and Chad Brown, has a legitimate shot here. Was not very good in the New York last time out. By not very good, I mean finished fourth by one length. And so horse was right there. Won the last two races before that, the very one at Gulfstream Park over a mile and 3/8, and then came back and won over a yielding course. We're going to get a bunch of rain today, tomorrow at Saratoga, not a bunch on Saturday. So I don't think it'll be a soft course by any stretch, but I do think there's a chance that it'll be a good course, if you will. And so if we're looking at a non-firm course, I do think Virginia Joy, the two, has a serious shot. Hard to look past Warlike Goddess, Joel Rosario in the irons for Bill Mott. One last time out in the Bewitch, ran in that Breeders' Cup Filly Mare turf last year, lost by a half a length under Julian Leperoux. Like that move to Joel Rosario, where she won by open lengths, by over a length. Last time in the Bewitch at Keeneland in April, a little bit of time off. Good news. Bill Mott, 24% in that amount of time off. So I do think she comes back. Those two are going to battle it out. So very deep closer in Warlike Goddess. Virginia Joy, a little bit more capable of sitting, maybe has won, by the way, from the front in the grade two. I think between those two, you're going to get your winner. Virginia Joy a little bit more versatile though. So in the pick six, I'm going to include both the two and the six. I'll go 6-2 in the Glen Falls.
All right, Matt, I just want to let you know, if you get a chance to go get on Spotify, you can see the video of this and your very unfortunate pause of your confused face of when you went off is fantastic to watch. So, make sure you, and that's, it's going to be like around like the 45 minute mark, cause Louie just talked for a long time. So, no, I'm just joking. He did great.
I'm filling space until Matt gets back.
Matt's back. Matt, did you have a pick here in the grade two Glen Falls?
No, I'm telling 100%. This is the God's honest truth here. I'm also playing a pick six on Saturday and went 2-6. So
same picks. All right, good. There you go. A little chalky, but that's all right.
No, it's a nice field too. I mean, Temple City Terror is 12-1 in this race. That horse has won 20% of its races on the turf. Petticoat's in this race. That's Jose Ortiz and Bill Mott. Nothing wrong with that, et cetera, et cetera. Key Biscayne's in this race, probably the least likely winner here. 2 of 18 lifetime on the turf. Six horses here. I think you can go with two and be pretty sure that you're going to start the pick six in the right way.
And of course, we're not going to talk about race eight. It is an allowance race. So if you want those picks, you got to make sure you go to the green sheets. The next stakes race is one of my favorites. It is the grade one Longines test. And Louis, this is a sprint on the dirt for three-year-old fillies. Do we have a single here?
We do. And I think Mike needs to give me a little bit of credit. How long have I been on the Matarea train?
Since the very beginning, honestly.
Yeah, for a long time. Even when she came out of the Beaumont, I singled her in the eight.
I think it was before that, though. I really feel like it was going into the Beaumont.
Yeah, into the Beaumont. And so that might be true. To me, she set up perfectly for the Acorn. I had her even before was it Secret Oath that scratched? Oh, no, I'm mixing up my fillies now. But so there was a major scratch in the Acorn. I had her. She ends up winning by six lengths under Flavian Pratt. I don't know if Matt agrees with this, but I have a little bit of a hot take. I thought Flavian Pratt would push for the jockey title at Saratoga. I think he's thinking a little too much. When he was in Southern California, he was just a rider. He was just doing it. I think he's overthinking it a little bit. Obviously, the Colony's considerably better at Saratoga than it was at, say, Santa Anita or Del Mar. But I think in his case, it's a case of he was the best at the AAA level. Now he's at the major league level. And he's finding out the difference isn't one step up. It's like five steps up and he's overthinking it. Good news. Matarea draws the rail. She can win from a little off the pace. She can win on the pace, whatever it might be. To me, at 7 furlongs, she's 2 for 2 at the distance. She's 1 in a mile. She's 1 at less than that. Give her one turn. That's my horse. So Matarea to me is the single of this sequence.
That's an interesting take on Flavian. Yeah, the
and it's not a knock on him, by the way, because I do think there's a massive adjustment going from.
Well, Matt mentioned it earlier. Matt mentioned it earlier, kind of questioned his ride in the Dandy, right? So
thinking too much, way too much with Zandon. He didn't have to push Zandon that early. I totally agree with that.
Go ahead, Matt. Don't want to stir your thunder there.
Yeah. I totally agree with Louie about singling Matt Array here, but I also added Sterling Silver.
I like that. Good.
Just because, you know, she's 15-1 on the morning line. There's going to be a ton of speed in this race. The three Elm Drive
is going to try to go out front. Yep.
Right. She could be forward leap placed. The same with November Rain. The five. The six.
Hot Peppers. The six is going to go out front for sure. That's right.
Right. So you have 3 to 4 horses that could all be forwardly placed there. Sterling Silver won by 4.5 at Belmont. So she likes to come from the mid pack, and you know, like she might not hit the board, but that's a nice price there. And if you hit it, your pick six.
You beat Battery in the pick six. I mean, it stacks. That's right, for sure.
Right. Exactly. That's
you probably take out 85% of the tickets. That's probably right. Yes.
That's the only way you're going to cash a large ticket on this card, but is by playing against the chalk. So you have to take a few chances. And
I'll push against that. I think there's going to be a lot of money in this pick six, man. I think this is a $1 million pick six.
Well,
on Saturday, to me, I think lots of people are going to see this card as an opportunity to play like a $3-4 pick six and press very specific races. So I think even using Monterey, you're still going to be able to get value. And so not value, excuse me. You're still going to be able to get, you know, a significant return on the pick six. So, because the way you're talking, by the way, if the chalk comes through, what are you thinking? Like $300?
No.
Cause to me, this is $1,000 sequence. If the chalk comes through.
Yeah, it could be, but you know, like, go back to race seven. You have the chalk with War Like Goddess, and then you have the chalk here in race nine, and then Life Is Good. So, you know, three out of the six races could be whatever.
That's what I'm looking at is four. Let's go.
I'm
with you though. So, it could chalk out. One of my favorite things about Saratoga is the reputation of being the graveyard of champions. They're only talking about the Traverse. It's one race. It's not the Graveyard of Champions. The Traverse is the Graveyard of Champions. The best horses win at Saratoga. That's, frankly, one of the very best things about Saratoga is that it features the best horses, and the best horses perform really great at Saratoga. It's a wildly fair track. That's the best thing about Saratoga. Not whatever picnic table or umbrella or whatever other thing. Yeah, spa. No, it's not that. It's the horse racing. The horse racing is the best thing about Saratoga. It is top three in the world for horse racing throughout the year as far as the quality of the fields, the quality of the runners, and the quality horses win the races at Saratoga. So I'll push back on that.
Yeah, we should look back at the payout on the pick five on Traverse Day last year, because I want to say it was under $100, and it was pure chalk that day.
It paid 72-1. I played a $3.50 ticket and made $72. I'm sorry. That's insane. Is that a bad return? Get out of here. No, Saratoga's awesome. Whatever. Yeah, let's go.
All right, let's move on to the
grade betting, one. For betting, winning. No one come at me. It's for betting.
$1 million grade one win, Winnie. It's a mile and an eighth. And we get the return of HRC, baby. Here it is, Hot Rod Charlie. And
you're gonna get a price,
it.
Dude.
Well, here's what I love. We've already had the Middle East bounce, and he didn't look terrible. He ran pretty well, and he's poised, man. I'm telling you right now, I'm loving Hot Rod Charlie right here. And I think Olympia's gonna get beat. So there you go.
By Hot Rod Charlie.
By Hot Rod Charlie.
Awesome. Okay, I love that. Go ahead, Ben. I'll let you go first.
I also don't fully understand Olympiad at 2-1 and Life is Good at 6-5. Like, I think that's a pretty big discrepancy.
Oh, okay. You think if Olympiad's 2-1, Life is Good should be 8-5, that kind of number?
Yeah, I think they should be closer to the same.
Got it. Okay.
Fair enough. For sure.
Yeah. Okay.
And I would argue that I would probably even have Olympiad ahead of Life is Good.
Over two turns, right? That's the thing here, right? Go ahead, yeah. Matt. I'm sorry. I'm talking.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. So Mike made an awesome point there about Hot Rod. I think Hot Rod's the key to the race, right? Everyone knows that Life is Good is going to be sent to the front. And look at Olympiad's last five races. He's stalked the pace every time and then came on from second and wound up winning the race. Hot Rod is the question mark. He could challenge Life is Good there, or he could opt to do what he did in the Classic and stick back and rate. So I don't know. Here's the thing about Hot Rod. He's run a number of races that are just eye popping, right? He went to the lead in the Belmont, and he challenged Essential Quality right to the wire almost. Every other horse in that race that was forwardly placed was 12 to 15 lengths back. So that just speaks to his talent. But when he's facing tougher competition, he's been able to hit the money. He's finished in second and third, and he has a number of fourths in big races like the Classic and the Dubai World Cup. But he hasn't broken through yet, and this could be his race on Saturday.
I guess, you know, he did, and then just tripped a couple horses and then got disqualified. But beyond that, yeah.
Can I give a hot take?
Sure.
If I owned Hot Rod Charlie, I would, because I think Bill Buick's in town to ride. Is he in town? I'm thinking of Charlie Appleby for the Invitational. I might be mixing up my riders. It might be better not to have Flavian on this horse, because something terrible happens every time Flavian's on this horse.
Well, we just talked about Flavian right there, right? So
yeah, right. And so, you know, even with, I mean, you know, last time out of Monmouth, Mike Smith gives him a really fair ride. He loses the Mind Control by a head. I mean, there's no shame in any of that. I just... Okay, so like Monterey, how long have I been on the Olympiad train, Mike?
For a very long time.
Long time. I think this is a 6-4 kind of race.
Well,
I
love really, that. we saw Olympiad run in the Alishiba, I mean, you went absolutely nuts on that one. So
yeah. Not that you were standing right next to me or anything, right? Whatever. But yeah, no, I love that Bill Mott has kept Junior Alvarado on this horse. By the way, that there's a connection there, and the two of them, they're hitting at 10% at Saratoga. Throw that out. It doesn't matter. That, you know, Junior has a great relationship with his horse. He seems to understand him. I went shorter again here. It's not a huge field either, to be fair. But I'm taking a third of the field. Life is Good. It's obvious the talent here, right? So Flavian rides him last time at Belmont in the Nehru. That was, if you can think about what Jackie's Warrior just did last weekend, that's what Life is Good did last time out in 7 furlongs. What I like about what Pletcher did there is he brought him back in a shorter race. Hey, just get essentially another exercise ride in. We're going to put you back to two turns because we want to see if you're ready for the Classic in the Breeders' Cup. And so to me, that's the question here is, can he get back to that form that he had where he won the Pegasus World Cup, right? Where that was, you know, that was a nice, he beats Nick's Go by open lengths. This is one of those horses. Do we find out how good Life is Good this is this weekend? To me, Life is Good, by the way, we talked about who's the best older horse in training. Life is Good as a step up on the Classic stuff on Flightline right now, because I don't know anything about Flightline over two turns. That's I know true. About Life is Good. I do.
He's just lightly raced. Yeah,
that's right. He's lightly raced, but I know the outcome there. He's made $3.5 million. They bought him for $500,000. That's a nice return on that investment. I'll take 7-1 all day. But to me, it's 6-4. If Olympiad wins this race and Life is Good loses, Matt, this is where we would disagree. A lot of people, I think, are going to single Life is Good in this spot. That's where you could use a horse like Olympiad, by the way, who's 5 straight races, continues to show up at every track that he's at, whether it be Gulfstream, Fairgrounds, Churchill Downs. I get it. It's not that kind of company. But when you win the Stephen Foster by open lengths And Mike and I were there. It wasn't his. He wasn't all out. That's the kind of thing. I think he and Life is Good will be neck and neck down the stretch here. At least I'm hoping, because I do want Life is Good to get back to that two-turn form. Again, lauds to Pletcher for putting him in a seven furlong race before he comes back at two turns, coming off the Arabian Peninsula, got him ready for this spot. I'm 6-4 in this race.
All right, we're going to move on to the next one, which is the Saratoga.
What else would we move on to? All right.
Well, you know, the race 11. It's grade one Saratoga Invitational Derby. And we're going to go on the Bougie Millen Turf Course.
Yes, let's go, Bougie.
Mile and 3/16 for three-year-olds. This is another million-dollar race. So big purse here. Matt, who do you like in this race?
Yeah, so I'm going to take a chance here and single the four, Nation's Pride.
Love it.
Yeah, we mentioned Charlie Appleby before, and Nation's Pride had a streak over in Europe of four wins in a row, and then he entered in a race against Desert Crown in June, and Desert Crown is arguably the top turf course in the world, and Nation's Pride went off as the third choice in that race, and that was a massive field. There were 17 horses entered there, and he ran into some traffic issues, and by the time he had any running room, it was too late, and he finished eighth by like 11 lengths or so.
Yeah.
So I'm going to throw a line through that race. Last time out, he ran at Belmont and rallied for second in that race. But around the turn, he went 8 or 9 wide there. So he was really coming on. He rallied there, and again, this $1 pick six is a $64 ticket. So I'm just going to roll the dice here and single Nation's Pride, and hopefully he has a better trip than the last two and winds up coming out with a win.
I'm with you. I'm trying to beat Annapolis here as well. The turf races are the best spot to do that. I think the point you could make here, Matt, is that he loses by 3/4 of a length at 1.25. We get an added half a furlong here against a horse like Classic Causeway, who's going to be the speed again. He's going to be out front again. That isn't going to change. We're going to get that set up again. We're going to get a little bit more of an opportunity to make up space here. The switch back to Bill Buick, I think, is a real positive here. Frank and Del Torre, I don't have to make excuses for him. But Charlie Appleby, Bill Buick, in the U.S. last four runs, they won three times. That's a huge thing. So for me, I had four on top. Then I went to the 10. I went outside to Stone Age, the Irish horse here. John Velasquez for Aidan O'Brien. Comes over, runs in that age in that race as well. He was right next to your favorite, Nation's Pride. They finished within 1/4 length of one another. Those are the two horses that are going to be charging at the end. I do think the favorite, the six, is going to be in the next spot here in Annapolis. Betting against Ired Ortiz
on the
at
turf.
Saratoga at the turf is probably a bad idea. So I have those three horses up top. I also like the 9, Classic Causeway, because once in a while in these races, Matt, you know, someone gets out front, stays out front, and it could be Classic Causeway again. It's a rare spot for Julien Leperoux, who's very good at rating horses over two turns on the turf and then making the move at the right time. He did a great job with Classic Causeway in the Belmont Derby last time out of rating him on the front. That's not easy to do as a jockey. I remember, and Mike, both of you guys will appreciate this because I know both of you guys are hockey fans. Wayne Gretzky could count within a half a second a 2-minute power play. And I think a lot of jockeys have to train themselves on how fast is my horse going right now and watching quarter poles, right? Watching eighth poles and those sorts of things. Like, where am I at on a furlong? Did we just go 24 and change, or did we go 23 and change? Did I go 20, 22 and change on a route race? That's a problem, that kind of thing. And so I think Julian's one of those guys. I think that he's got that kind of clock in his head. So I ended up with four horses here. I went 4, 2, 9, and 6 in this race.
Yeah, I was glad to see that you didn't like totally besmirch Classic Causeway's last run, because I think we could have.
It was legit. It was totally legit. Yes,
I think we got legit turf.
No one should look at that. Yes, no one should look at that race and think that Classic Causeway can't do it again. That's ridiculous. No, he showed.
I mean,
it.
I think the 8-1 in the morning line is a total diss.
Maybe, but mostly just can he do it again is the question. And usually in horse racing, the question is, can you do it again? And that's fair. Look, if you look back at Olympiad's numbers, if you look back at any of these really top level horses, people said, okay, that was a nice race. Can you do it again? And that's always a fair question.
Yeah, sure. But he did it and beat half this field. And then Annapolis.
That's
is sitting
Giant
there.
Causeway on the top, Thunder Gulch on the bottom. There's no reason he can't do it again. I'm with you, man.
Annapolis is really, listen, nice horse. He's going to come up. He's taking a step up in class.
You get IRAD.
We do have IRAD, but at the end of the day, like if we're going to say Classic Cowboys got that grade one,
I'm with you, man.
I don't fully see it. So,
by the way, that anecdote that Louis had on Gretzky is awesome. And it's,
don't give Louis any credit, man.
No. It's straight out of Seabiscuit, because, George Wolf and those guys back in the day, they used to be adept at having that running clock in their head when they didn't know what the fractions were. And that separates the best of the best with jockeys with just average ones. And so, like you said, with Classic Causeway there, it's really tough to rate on the lead. And so you have to have that running clock in the head. And
I wonder, though, if it's not like driving a car and it's more of like you can feel the gear that the horse is in.
No, not for time. I'll disagree there, because sometimes I'm sure all of us have watched races and thought, wow, that was a really fast first fraction. And then it's like 24-1. And you're like, oh, was it as fast as I thought? So I'm with Matt on this one. Leperoux, for whatever he is, he's hitting at 12% this year in his very large sample size at lots of different tracks. Gulfstream, in the championship meet, Churchill for lots of it, and then at Saratoga. He's sitting at 12% at Saratoga. That's what kind of rider he is. 1 out of 8. And this is the kind of race that he picks off. And credit to him, because, he rode this horse in the Kentucky Derby, nowhere to be found. They run him back with Brian Hernandez in the Ohio Derby, nowhere to be found. And then they put Julian back on because it's a grass race. And that's where I think once in a while, trainers, especially like a Kenny McPeak, knows, hey, this guy knows this horse. He knows the grass turf, he knows those turf races. I mean, I think there's a lot to it, frankly. And I mean, when I first started this show, I remember saying, my favorite bet is Julien Leperoux over 2 turns on the grass at Churchill Downs. I've learned that that's frankly just 2 turns over any grass course anyway.
All right. We're going to move on to, we're going to do one more race. We're going to do out of Del Mar. We're going to do the grade one Clement Hirsch. And I don't know, Matt, you may not have already prepared for this, so I don't want to.
Are we not doing the West Virginia Derby?
No, man, we're running long on time. Like at the end of the day, like it's we're gonna skip it. We're gonna skip the West Virginia Derby.
It's there's, $500,000 race.
There's nothing there. No,
we're simplifications skipping. In it. Homebrews no. in it. Homebrews winning the West Virginia Derby. Keep going.
All right, there's your quick pick.
I'm with you there on homebrew. Right.
Thank you. Okay,
let's talk about She Dares the Devil. All right, let's go. Frenchie's decided to go get some sun in California this year.
He's crushing too, man.
And he's doing really well. She Dares the Devil's in this race. Who's beating She Dares the Devil in the Clement Hirsch?
No one.
Agree. I agree. Man,
that was really quick.
No, it's okay. I think Blue Stripe runs a big race though.
I'm really upset, by the way. Because Louie knows, I'm going to be in freaking San Diego Saturday. I'm getting in late. And so I normally would be at Del Mar for this day, and I'm going to miss seeing She Dares the Devil in this race.
By the way,
I'm hanging out with Dinnerman. I would have been out there with Dinnerman,
Yeah, you'd be out there crushing it. look for Private Mission Soothsay, who's coming out of a win in the Indiana Oaks. And then Blue Stripe to all be part of that trifecta or that superfecta, whatever it might be. But I agree with Matt. I think She Dares the Devil is the class here. And she's 8-5. That's generous. I'd love 8-5 on She Dares the Devil in this race. She's clearly the class, especially at 5 years old. And, I was trying to figure out for ABR, this is one of our, for America's Best Racing, this is one of our races this weekend, which I appreciated. They're actually doing an affiliate mare race. I was trying to figure it out. The incredible part is Soothsay won the Indiana Oaks in her fourth race ever.
Wow.
That's cool, right? And so Richard Mandel is shipping her back out. Mike Smith picks up the mount here because Flavian Pratt, I've forgotten this, had flown in for the Indiana Oaks and had run on that day, on that Saturday. And she won by a neck over Moonswag. And but no, She Dares the Devil isn't just the class here. She's the race.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say, Matt?
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, whoa, look at you.
Dude.
Hey, there's preseason football on.
That's right. It's 6-0 Raiders.
No. Don't do this. It's 9:07. Mike needs to go to bed.
Yeah, whatever.
Okay.
All right, we're going to catch you next time. We're going to pay the tab. We're going to get out of here. See you the next time on the Horse Racing Happy Hour.